Sports Radio. The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Goodbye, good afternoon. Welcome to Friday's Man in Line, this lunchtime final day of July 2026. Who'd have thought it? So what's on your mind today? Text, email, call and WhatsApp. The Manx Wildlife Trust is the latest to weigh into the offshore wind farm debate, saying that the ecological assessments taken by the applicant behind Moore Vannin are inadequate, and the impacts on the Manx environment are understated. Lots of other stuff in the news as well about those birds being humanely managed at St John's. I think what they say is killed. That's what humanely managed means, doesn't it? Or can anybody enhance it? And who's dumping birds then? Who's dumping chickens by the Arboretum? Who's doing that? DEFA say the population of birds at St John's has been humanely managed. Questions were asked online whether chickens on the site were being culled to keep numbers down. The Arboretum's got a mix of birds, including free-ranging domestic poultry, which are believed to have been originated from birds abandoned on the site over the years. Have you got any thoughts on this? Who's dumping them there? To prevent excessive population, you're asked not to feed the chickens, avoid bread when feeding the ducks, and not to abandon unwanted poultry or other animals. Other animals? Crikey, what is it? It's not a zoo in waiting, is it? Do you go to the Arboretum much? Do you feed the ducks? I mean, they are handsome ducks, aren't they? But do you feed them? And should you be feeding bread to ducks anyway? Anything else that's on your mind? Oh, David's first with us today. Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. And I didn't get a chance to speak to the Chief Constable, but the old chestnut I'm wanting to bring up again is the Facebook recognition, and that's both at the airport and the sea terminal, and number plate recognition. Now, these are fairly simple policies or costs to bring forward, and it would be, I'm sure that if the Chief Constable was on scene, he would love to have those tools in his armoury,
right,
to do, because then, and I just worry about people sometimes saying, well, it's a human right, you know, you can walk here and walk there. In nowadays, you go to other different countries, you probably, when you go through the airports and stuff like that, they take a picture of you.
Not only that, then, David, let me tell you, if you walk down Strand Street in Douglas,
there's
cameras there.
So, the whole thing,
who's stopping this? If it's politicians, why do you think they're stopping facial recognition and automatic number plate recognition?
Yeah, well, I don't think it's the minister. I won't mention her name, the Home Affairs Minister. She's been pushing it, as far as I know. And every time she comes to a meeting of the Council of Ministers and whatever, I think the issue is raised. But at the end of the day, we're so close to an end of a government. And a change around on the politicians we've got, because you look at something and the people knock on your door, and I've only had one. At the end of the day, what you need to ask them is, what have you done for the island, and what have you done for me as a citizen? And that's the two questions that they should be able to answer to you.
Well,
never mind
let's thing. Face it, you've been in local politics an awful long time. You were in Keys as well.
Yeah.
When you used to knock on people's door and they asked you that, what did you say when you wanted to be an Onchan MHK?
Well, I used to, at them times, we had probably a bit of more money, and we used it, well, I think the previous governments before used it wisely and looked at examination of contracts, not examinations as such, but looked at a contract, and I just can't believe that most of the contracts the government are getting involved in, and I'll bring the housing board up at the old nurses' home site. That's ridiculous when it's our money that's getting being spent, and we can't ask questions of how much are these guys getting or women are getting on who are directors, and who's living in it and what's the criteria for it and why isn't the shop done?
Well, if that, go on.
I was going to say, if that goes on forever. And the other thing, I know Tim's gone now, or on his way out, and good for him, because he wants to retire with the family. And you've got to look at that to say to other people of two, saying, well, I'm taking a back seat now, and we're going to bring some fresh blood in. But that fresh blood needs to know what's going on the island. And internationally, we don't do anything anymore. At least Alan Bell, when he was out there, he used to go over to England. Tony Brown used to do the same. They used to meet, well, I didn't meet them anyway, but they meet the Labour Party and all the governing parties. And you've got to engage with people that's in England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales, haven't we? That's the old thing.
What do you think about this? What do you think about this? That they're going to be two post offices now in Onchan. Did you hear that?
Well, I was going to say at the end there, I want to thank the current guy and the family that's at the post office in Main Road, Onchan. But what a kick in the nuts for him, really, to tell you the truth. I'm sorry about using that term, but anyway, that's nothing I can do about that. But to offer him, and I remember talking to him ages ago and saying to him, he couldn't run a business. He has to lease the shop. That's not his fault. You've got to do something, haven't you? But then they're going to split it now in two locations, one in Birchill, where I live. I mean, that might be fine for a few, and the other one at Ballacrink. But I don't think they've even thought about what we're actually after is not have our tax discs and whatever renewed at the post office. We want a proper post office instead of just getting old stamps and an odd bit. And I don't think even, I must check on Ballacrink anyway, I don't think the nearest post box is probably on the main road somewhere. Never mind.
Oh, yeah. Have you been to the co-op in Main Road lately? Main Street, by the way.
In Onchan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Liz dropped me a note to say there's been water running down the road for 2 weeks. She didn't know whether it was a natural spring or a burst main.
No. Well, the Water Authority, if anybody thinks of something like that is, just ring the Water Authority up and register it as an issue. I think it's a valve somewhere in the main road there, which has probably got a leak on it and probably want the packing box redone. But the problem you've got is when you're on a main road, and especially a busy road like Onchan, is closing it off and getting it done.
Well, how long would it take to mend? Would it be a half-day job?
Well, the problem is you've got to get down to it. You can imagine you can't just go into a smaller hole where you put a steel tube down and turn it off or on. You've got to get down and take off the packing box. You've got to isolate the water. It'll be a main supply coming to maybe even going to Laxey, because there's a main trunk main that comes through there and goes on to Laxey. But it's something that the Water Authority and the lads there can actually do, A, if they get the time, and B, if they close the road.
Okay. All right. Good to hear from you today, Dave. Have a good weekend.
All right. Yeah, and the same, mate.
All the best to you. And remember, you can, Manx Utilities do have, I think it's a reporter leak line. So if you see anything that looks like a water main leaking, then get on your phone to them straight away. And then, because the last thing you want to do in this weather is waste water. But then again, it's going to start raining soon. Betty's on now. Hi, Betty.
Hi, Andy. I can't stay on for long because I'm going to my exercise class in Ramsey Town Hall today.
Oh, crikey.
It's run by Steph, by the way, and she's excellent.
Right, jolly.
Anyway, what I want to say is the government lying to us? Have they already sold us out for 30 pieces of silver? I fear that this government has agreed to the desecration of this island by allowing its waters to be covered by wind farms. We need a referendum rather on this, not allowing, we shouldn't be allowing potential MAKs to have their mouths shut.
Well, in reality, Betty, we don't know. We don't know because there is a feeling, and it may be completely unfounded, that, as you say, somewhere in government, somebody signed a letter to Orsted saying, yes, it's going to go ahead at some point. We don't know that, and it may be completely wrong.
I know,
but it would be nice. It would be nice to know, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. That's why I asked the question. I wasn't saying this is a fact. I was asking, is the government lying to us? Have they sold us out for 30 pieces of silver? And the fact that we have been told, this is probably a fact, I think it is, that potential electors can't give their opinion on this, otherwise they won't get into the Council of Ministers and they won't be allowed to vote on it. And that, to me, is totally undemocratic.
OK. All right. Enjoy your exercise class. OK.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
16 minutes past 12 on Manx Radio. So has that water stopped running down the road, main road in Onchan, outside the co-op? It would be nice to know. Oh, just a quick word. I just wanted to draw something to your attention before we go any further. When I can find it. Oh, here we are. Yes, go to the Summerland site this Sunday, 2nd of August at 7 o'clock for the 1 minute silence to mark the 53rd anniversary of the Summerland fire, where 50 men, women and children perished. Gather to remember them, the friends and the families and the survivors and all those who came to their aid in the unimaginable tragedy. The event's organised by the Summerland Memorial Limited, and it's this Sunday, 2nd of August, 7 o'clock at the Summerland site. Howard's on Man in Line now. Hi, Howard.
Oh, hello, Andy. Yeah, I was just looking at one of your items on your news. It's from Brian, what's the name, from...
Thompson.
Thompson, yeah. A lot of people, now I'm almost certain this is still in being, on the ships, and I have seen this, I've been up on the bridge and I've seen it, there's a setup, what they say, mode A and mode B. And that's the way the ship can sail when she's carrying passengers. Because we fell foul of this quite a few years ago, because we always got a cabin on the vent. And at this particular time, the Mananan was out of working order. She'd been damaged. So they were putting passengers from Mananan onto the Ben. Fine. But when we walked on board, went up to the information desk, oh, Mr. Quayle, cabin's ready. We have a problem, though. What's that? I said, she said, you're going to have to share it. I said, who with? Oh, I don't know. She says, we're just moving people around. I said, well, I won't be sharing the cabin. And apparently, and as I say, I have seen it, if another ship within the fleet goes out of working order, then the mode A or mode B will kick in. Let's assume mode A is the normal everyday sailing situation. Mode B would be the emergency one, where every seat that's on that ship has to be made available to customers. And that is the criteria written down. Now, I don't know whether it's a maritime ruling or the steam packet ruling, but I have seen that in the bridge on the Ben McCree. And we eventually ended up in a disabled cabin. And not a very nice one at that either. I felt sorry for the people who were in the disabled cabins. And we were just about to settle down, my wife and I, next thing the sliding door opened. Hello there, we're in the cabin next door. Well, I thought, well, that's not right, that should be locked.
Yeah.
And they just walked into our cabin. But whether that's been changed or not now, I don't know. But the attitude that Mr. Thompson is, this is the boat that the people wanted. They didn't want that. They wanted the boat as it was. And if you look at it, I don't know how many cabins there were. Let's say there was 20. 20 cabins. Well, each one of those is capable of accommodating four people. So that's 80 people less that are able to carry on board the ship in their total numbers on every trip. So what's that doing to reduce the numbers of people able to travel? But it's...
They've taken the cabins away from the Bemercry because they wanted to put the crew in, because they wanted the crew to live on board. And I can't believe that they didn't think that at some point they may want cabins, or whether or not there's a plan to build another something. Do you remember when the Bemercry first arrived, there wasn't enough space on it? So they built that passenger lounge on the back, didn't they? They put another... So whether or not they're aiming to do something like that and build another lot of cabins somewhere and bolt that on, but how would we've always been used to having, even the Lady of Man had small cabins, but she had some cabins.
All the ships had cabins the old steamships.
So I can't think why they would decide to have no passenger cabins at all, unless the thought was it's going to be sold to somebody else.
Well, it's also for saving money, because they won't have to pay for accommodation for the crew. And also, what is the legality of it? Because they are of no fixed abode then when they're on there. And there's nothing to stop people in the UK living or having rented property in the UK and then living on board the boat for a fortnight and then going back to that. So they've got no fixed abode.
Well, I'm sure the steam packets, I'm sure they've investigated all the legalities of it. This is a cost-saving measure, which means that they'll have crew living on board. Now, that's fine. The steam packet are perfectly entitled to adopt that measure for their business. That's great. But to have no passenger cabins is another step.
Well, they're now having to modify something because of this young girl that's having to go away, and she's unable to fly because of her health.
Yeah.
They're now having to accommodate a patient room. Fancy having to put a patient room on board a vessel that used to have all those cabins.
And you can't think that young girl will be the only person that this will apply to.
No. Well, we used to always go on there, and my wife was not good for climbing stairs. She had very bad sciatica. So we used to always, and they were always very good, used to say, can we have the lift lane? And that's when you see people with the hazard lights flashing. They're going down. They're not getting priority to a degree like that. They are getting assistance. And we were able to get down alongside one of the lifts. And we could go up in there, and that's used to say the lift lane. And we could get up about six decks and go up to the cabin. And that, this is what Brian Thompson's saying. Oh, we always do this, we do that, do the other. But that's a load of flannel. And as I say, the attitude he's adopted and the words he said, this is the boat that the people asked for or told us to keep. In other words, it's our fault. And there's nothing to do with the steam packet. They're just trying to accommodate a grumpy population. But we're grumpy for a reason. But as I say, people should be knowledgeable that I think they're still in being, and they should ask for it, is Mode A and Mode B still in being on board the Isle of Man steam packet vessels? And that way, every seat that's there has got to be occupied in one of those modes. I'm not sure which one it is. But it's a disgrace that, going by that, as I say, if there was 20 cabins, that's 80 people that they cannot accommodate on every sailing.
And remember, at the moment, Howard, we're lucky with the weather. If the weather turns over the next few weeks and before the end of September, then I can guarantee the grumpiness will move up a few degrees.
Oh, yes. Well, that was, I'll say this jokingly, we used to get a cabin because you could always be sick in private.
Yes.
You know. But that aside, the cabins were comfortable, they were convenient, and I don't know how often they were booked, but we many a time couldn't get one, and our grandson and his daughter were wanting because they were on the night sail and going back on Monday, And of course, there's no cabins, and then he had to drive down through to Stoke-on-Trent.
Yeah.
He was hoping to get his head down because the original plan was to come on the Manxman.
Well, I know. I mean, there are plenty of people, Howard, who've come on the Bemercree on the 02:15 on a Sunday night into a Monday morning, had a night's sleep, and gone to work on the Monday morning. You can't do that if you're sitting up all night.
No. And he said those reclining seats that they put in are neither use nor ornament. He said they don't go right back, so you only recline so far, but you can't sleep in that position. And who wants to sleep in a, you know, like a church hall? So, but it's a steam packet or penny pinching again, and it's going back to what people used to refer to it, unfortunately, cattle class.
All right. Okay.
And that's what some of them used to refer to as cattle class. Okay. And they're jamming as many in. And the likes of the Manxman, when she was built, her lifeboat, one of the lifeboats, was raised off the ground, off the deck. And that was so they could accommodate, although they couldn't use it, they could accommodate extra passengers on board because that was considered part of the deck then.
Okay. All right.
So all these little things they work on.
Good to hear from you. Have a good weekend.
Take
Thanks
care.
For calling us today.
Bye now.
All right. Manx Wildlife Trust, the island's leading conservation charity, is the latest to weigh in on the offshore wind farm debate. It says ecological assessments undertaken by the applicant behind the Moore Vannin proposal are, quote, inadequate, and the impacts to the Manx environment, quote, understated. It's issued a statement declaring its belief that assessments provided by Ørsted don't provide clear analysis of impacts or mitigations in a specifically Manx context. The chief exec of the Manx Wildlife Trust is Graham Makepeace Warne.
Clearly this is an important issue. It's a massive project for the island, and there's clearly a lot of very strong opinions out there. And at Manx Wildlife Trust, we were starting to get frustrated at the amount of misinformation, accusations of not having done anything, when in reality we were putting a huge amount of work, a huge amount of resourcing into making representations at the examination. So we wanted to put a statement out to try and address some of those things. And importantly, we wanted to make the point that there is no point in us as an organisation coming out for or against this project at the current time. Our best strength, if you like, is to work through the examination process, and that's exactly what David and his team have been doing. So we wanted to put a statement out explaining the level of work that we'd done and what our findings were. But to reiterate, it doesn't say that Manx Wildlife Trust are either for or against this as a project. We see the need for and support the idea of renewable energy, but we want to make sure that wildlife and wildlife's needs are heard in that process.
Graham Makepeace Warne from the Manx Wildlife Trust, and the David he was talking about is David Bellamy. So one of the examples the charity has given in terms of these ecological assessments is one from Ørsted regarding bird deaths. It estimates 660 killed per year, while the modelled 309 annual guillemot deaths would represent about 20% of the known Manx overwintering population. So here is the charity's head of conservation and land, David Bellamy.
So I guess it's important to know that these figures are the applicant's figures from their own modelling. We don't have in-house expertise to do our own modelling in this area, so we're taking the applicant's figures at face value. To be fair to the applicant, all of this is above board. It's all in the public domain, but of course it is buried in those 10,000 pages that we talked about before. So by going through this, we're wanting to pick out these impacts. And something that this has highlighted, especially in using seabirds as an example, is what the applicant is saying is that these significance, the 660 expected bird deaths per year, is insignificant. And they've come to that assessment by using what's called biogeographical ranges. And sometimes that's, you know, at the scale of the western side of the British Isles, for example. What we're saying is, when we start to look at those same figures but reference them to the Manx population, that these really are quite significant. And that significant is significance is important, because under established environmental impact assessment protocols, if something is insignificant, you don't have to mitigate it. What we're saying is, on the Isle of Man, we think these figures are significant and need to be mitigated. And actually, Manx policy is different to in the UK. And we've got three different areas of policy and legislation on the Isle of Man that say all adverse impact impacts have to be mitigated, whether they're significant or insignificant at all.
That's David Bellamy, Head of Conservation and Land at the Manx Wildlife Trust. We asked Orsted for a response. We couldn't get them to say anything, but they sent us some words, and these are they. Our environmental surveys and impact assessment methods follow internationally recognised standards and were developed through extensive consultation with Manx statutory, that's DEFA, and tertiary, e.g. Manx Wildlife Trust stakeholders. They've also been scrutinised throughout the examination. Orsted said that Manx Wildlife Trust has been engaged at all stages of the project development and have had multiple opportunities to comment on both the scope of the surveys and the assessment methodology. No alternative assessment approach has been proposed by Manx Wildlife Trust or other stakeholders. Orsted said, during the examination, we provided extensive clarification on what we mean by the term uniquely Manx. It means applying robust, internationally recognised best practice while reflecting the island's specific environmental conditions, which is exactly what we've done. Orsted said, we understand the examining body satisfied with those explanations, having no further questions in relation to the term. In relation to the potential effects on features of ornithological interest, our assessment, that's Orsted's assessment, concluded there are no likely significant effects requiring mitigation, and that conclusion has been supported by evidence presented throughout the examination. That's Orsted's words, by the way, not mine.
For a wide range of wood-burning stoves and a complete installation service, visit The Snug in Ramsey. And we don't stop there. Kiln-dried firewood and full aftercare service, including chimney sweeps and maintenance. Call The Snug in Ramsey.
Oh, Jew, in 1 minute we're roasting hot in the conservatory and the next minute we're freezing cold.
Well, missus, you know how a hat keeps you cool in the summer and warm in the winter? Well, a solid conservatory roof from Spectrum Windows does the same job.
Great solution. Tell you what, Geoffrey needs a little bit of work on top. Do you think they could help him too?
Only if they've started selling wigs.
Transform your conservatory with a Guardian or Ultra Frame solid roof. Visit Spectrum Windows, the showroom, Derby Road, Ramsey, or call 817777.
Simply Income Protection from Kestrel Insurance. A choice of benefits. Simple underwriting and peace of mind with a regular income for up to 2 years if you're unable to work due to illness or injury. Kestrel Insurance is registered with the Isle of Man Financial Services Authority.
Visit Ramsey Art Gallery for a fabulous range of top brand watches and stunning gold and silver jewellery. Gifts for all occasions and of course our gallery of prints and original artworks. Find all this and more at Ramsey Art Gallery Jewellers and Engravers opposite the RNLI shop.
Most builders start with a hammer and saw. Manx Construction start with ideas and imagination. For new build, extension or home office, Manx Construction offer full service from planning to completion. Call Tony on 452 688.
The House of Keys general election is on Thursday, the 24th of September, and Manx Radio is helping you get to know the people asking for your vote. From Monday, the 31st of August, join us for our live constituency debates hosted at Studio One by ELS Group, where every candidate standing will be invited to take part. Want to be there? Well, just visit the Manx Radio election mini site, find the date of your constituency debate, and apply for your free audience ticket. Find all the details at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
It's a shame about the post office at Onchan. You know, Braddon wanted to take the post office and grocery shop because it's supposed to belong to the Bee Gees. Is that true? So, the Bee Gees, Anna. Oh, that's Anna. I don't quite know the point you're trying to make, Anna, but thanks anyway. Do you think the staff on the text of 350 said, do you think the staff on the bench should be allowed to go home so that they don't need cabins? At the well, there's a lot of people. There are foreign nationals who work on the boat. So a lot of them live on the boat. But the fact is that not all crew are live aboard. There are some crew from the Isle of Man who do live ashore. Jason dropped me a note. Actually, it was one that we didn't get to the Chief Constable, but I'll read it anyway, Jason. Around community policing and roads policing, it seems to me that outside of major events like the TT, there is a distinct lack of visible proactive policing versus reactive policing. No police monitoring speeds through villages, and certainly no police walking around Ramsey where I live during the day and evenings, since just after TT. During TT, police regularly enforce speeds approaching the mountain near the Ginger Hall in Sulby and approaching Ramsey Grammar. Since the end of TT, nothing. I'd like to know why why, says Jason. He also says, can we have some dedicated days where we don't mention the wind farm? There are so many issues facing the Isle of Man, and almost daily the conversation becomes dominated by wind farms. My unpopular view, by the way, is the government should establish a sovereign energy company and go and get the gas. Jill's with us now. Hi, Jill.
Oh, hi, Andy. I'd just like to remind people, as you did earlier, about the Summerland tribute on Sunday.
Yeah.
I should be there, and I hope people do attend. It's very sad that it was rejected, what we tried for, but never mind, we'll carry on. And it's a shame that we have to gather around a building that's still there looking like death. I mean, every time you go and visit someone who's passed away, you expect something pretty, don't you, when they're with their maker. So that was the first thing. The second thing is I go swimming regularly, and I thought I'd share this with your listeners. Yesterday, it wasn't very busy, and I was with another gentleman, only two of us in the lane swimming. And as you know, the tiles are broken, and they're cut off, so you can't do a full length.
Right.
Well, that's by the by. And then this guy asked the guy looking after us, can I pop in with my camera? So he wasn't a spring chicken. We found out later when he got out after about half an hour, he was an engineer, and he had a little camera on him, and he was out of breath. My husband's an ex-diver, and he said, why didn't he have someone with him with a rope and a weight? You can't take pictures of tiles that are broken with a little tiny camera. He was bobbing up and down trying to get pictures. And then this New Zealand guy, we were only two in the lanes, very nice gentleman, he chatted with him, and he found out he was an engineer, and he was going to have pictures and find out how they can start this repair business.
Was he there? Well, was he there officially, or was he just somebody who happened to be there with
a
camera?
He was there officially.
Oh, I see.
Because I heard him talk to the lifeguard, but he didn't look official. And I mean, health and safety. I mean, I'm a nurse. I thought, my goodness, you know, he wasn't, like I said, he wasn't a spring chicken. And I mean, how unprofessional. So is he going to toddle back to Daphne Kane? And I mean, you did ask her, when are we going to get the tiles fixed? Do you think she'll be any wiser? Don't think so. Looks very unprofessional.
Well, the thing is, how long does it take to mend some tiles in a swimming pool?
Yeah, I know, but why can't they send people, even a diver who's a plumber or something, to go down there? My husband said he will never get a decent picture down there because you wobble all around without having a rope and something where you can stay still and take pictures of the tiles. It was really quite amusing. And I thought, this is just how our government is run at the moment. It really is. My husband had to take Monday off because we had our little granddaughter, Ivy. She's got 6 weeks off school, and you want to take them somewhere nice. And we enjoyed a wonderful day at Morag Park. But I don't drive. He had to take a day off to take them. My son's now got an allotment because he lives in a fancy apartment in Douglas. There's no park for the children still. And like Daphne came with her tiles, she doesn't know when it's going to happen. The gentleman on your radio said we're going to get a park, but I don't think we're going to get it anytime soon. Andy, I feel like going around with a collection box. All those MHKs with children, if they want a swing and a couple of slides that have been taken away from their garden, and that's all that we had, Andy. I saw lots of nationalities in Morag Park. It's a beautiful park. We don't want that. We just please put back what you took away from us. Now, you know, it's just not fair, Andy, and they won't make that park. They won't put it up. So let's do it ourselves.
That's an interesting point. An interesting point, then. If we all started and clubbed together to do it, what do you think they'd say?
I think we'd get one very quickly, just like when King Charles came.
Oh,
they did the prom very nicely and very quickly.
Yes. And then a week later, they said they're going to complete the horse tramway after he'd endorsed it.
We're being lied to all the time, and I hope fresh blood comes. I've been listening to the candidates and a half an hour before you come on, and there's some jolly good youngsters there, like the children you interview. They've got some good grown-up heads on young shoulders. Let's have people with a few qualifications. Are these people for finance? Have they any qualifications? I had to do qualifications for nursing, but you can come into be an NHK, you get lots and lots of money, and you don't know how to add two and two together.
Okay.
So please, you know, let's get this part done. We're not going to get it done. My husband has to take a day off work to take me to this beautiful park in Ramsey, and we just want what was taken away from us.
Okay.
So MHKs are listening. They do listen to you, Andy. Oh, and another thing, the allotment where my son has, there's a lovely man there. I've never met him, and they only had the allotment for a week. Because, we have no park in Douglas. And he's given me some rhubarb. I'm cooking it as we speak. Rhubarb crumble. And he's called Richard. He's heard me on Man in Line. He listens to your show as well. So, Richard, if you're listening now, thank you very, very much. I'm made up.
All right. Have a good weekend, Jill.
It's a small island.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Andy.
Good to
Bye.
Hear from you. Well, and a hello to Rhubarb Richard as well. Following on, this is an anonymous from Peel who just said, following on from the Chief Constable being on air on Wednesday with regard to road traffic collisions, would the introduction of dash cams being mandatory on all vehicles not make it much easier for them to complete their investigations, especially in the cases where there's been a loss of life? I just wonder what you think about this, whether or not you think, and maybe the insurance company we've got something to say about this. If every vehicle on the Isle of Man, everything that had a Manx registered plate, when it went to the test centre, had to have a dash cam on it, and they can be made relatively unobtrusive, because if everybody has a dash cam, then we'll all be on a level playing field. What do you think about that? Or maybe the insurance companies could give a bit of a discount if somebody did have a dash cam. What do you think about that? Mandatory dash cams. There seems to be, Gaz, there seems to be no value in spending on ID checks on the Isle of Man. Controls to prevent drug dealers and illegal immigrants should be at UK ports. If they aren't, and the police continue arresting people once they're here based on UK intelligence, we better extend the prism, says Gaz. Well, I think that's what we're going to do, to be quite honest. And Jamie said, having sat through all the Moore Van Inn hearings on behalf of Garth commissioners, I would like to publicly praise the excellent professional input into the process of three local experts. That's David Bellamy from Manx Wildlife, David Beard from the Manx Fish Producers, and Kevin Wells from the Manx Bat Group. Thank you, Jamie, and here's Bonzo with us now. Hi, Bonzo.
Hello. Yes, in response to one of your previous messages, no, it's not going to be a wind farm day. Instead, I'm going to address the Summerland inquests. Of course, there's been the decision by Dean to call it on these things. But perhaps we ought to go back to the actual original inquest in 1974, which was presided over by a judge from the Northern Circuit called Mr. Justice Mr. Justice Cantley. Now, older viewers may remember that later that decade, Mr. Justice Cantley became rather famous, and indeed rather famously lampooned, for his summing up in the trial of Jeremy Thorpe, the conspiracy to murder his former boyfriend, Norman Scott. That being done by Peter Cook, of course, in the secret policeman's ball, after which his career as a judge somewhat stalled. He then went to become treasurer of Middle Temple, I think, that particular inn of court. But it was not as if he was unknown to the Isle of Man before 1974, because Mr. Justice Cantley was Judge of Appeal in the Isle of Man High Court from 1962 to 1965, before being appointed as a High Court judge in 1965, and thence gaining his knighthood. Now, if you were looking for someone to host someone to preside at an inquiry who might perhaps have a slightly more sympathetic view to the Isle of Man's position, of course, regarding all the legal arguments as well, then you might be inclined to suggest that such a person was going to be the presiding judge at the inquest, then being known, of course, to the Isle of Man legal worthies and government worthies at that time.
What's your thought on Deemster Corlett's decision?
Well, this is the three branches of government problem. Because essentially, although the AG's department has this kind of quasi-relationship between the judiciary and the administration, with also providing legal advice to the legislature, there are separations, of course, separations of powers. And so for the judiciary to direct on something which would be regarded as a matter of policy, rather than a matter of law, to direct the Attorney General about that, I think would be seen as a breach of that separation of powers. Now, Walter Wallenberg, of course, is retiring, and he has said, there are no plans for the adoption of any form of Hillsborough law. Well, he might not have any, but whether the incoming administration has is another matter. And of course, because of the way that the Hillsborough law was constructed, there will have to be, inevitably, some pieces of legislation put in place in the Isle of Man to mirror Hillsborough law, because of the interactions that we have with the UK government. So, we've not even reached the third act on this one yet.
You think the story's going to continue?
Oh, very much so.
Okay. Monzo, we appreciate it. Have a good weekend. Thanks for calling.
Then. Thank you. Bye.
Good to hear from you. 14 minutes before one on Man in Line today. I walked along the freshly resurfaced Seacliff Road, says James. Seacliff Road in Onchan, in front of the apartments. Why was that road a priority when it's all it seems is a car park for employees of Utmost and whoever else is on the Port Jack office block? Surely there are roads on the Isle of Man in worse state and urgently in need of repair. And why have they painted a yellow bus stop? Are bus vanning going to use the road? Otherwise, the bus that stops there is the Opal coach to pick up office workers. So why is taxpayers' money being used on a private operator and providing them with a personal bus stop? Is there something going on here? Did Opal or the companies of Port Jack officers pay for the resurfacing? And just a reminder, Douglas City Council is hosting their annual Summerland Memorial Service at 6:45 on Sunday at the Kay Memorial Gardens, where the Summerland Memorial is situated. Desmond said it's maritime law seating. The cabins on the Ben have been covered converted to crew cabins, so they'll be available 24/7, the crew, that is. Ian said, there's no such thing as renewable energy. I implore anyone who has an interest in the subject or those who are undecided to watch a geologist called Scott Tinker on YouTube. As I've mentioned before, the net zero carbon con is the biggest tax grab ever played on mankind. Strong words from Ian on WhatsApp.
Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
For over 40 years, Hospice Isle of Man has provided free specialist palliative and end-of-life care for people of all ages across our island. We support patients and families at home, in the hospice, and the community when it matters most. Every donation helps keep our care free. Find out more, donate or get involved at hospice.org.im.
This advert is brought to you by Kell Properties.
Direct Cremation is just that, an affordable and simple cremation without all the costs associated with a funeral service. Find out more by visiting directcremation.im or phone Direct Cremations on 478 422.
Whatever your business, whatever its size, you can always rely on the island's leading fuel and oil supplier to keep you moving. Ellen Vannin Fuels, powering the island and powering industry. Call us on 844-000.
From boxing
to badminton,
football
to fencing.
It's the Utmost Community Sports Fun Day, Saturday the 1st of August at Nobles Park.
From 12 noon to 4pm, there'll be a variety of sports and physical activities for you to take part in, whatever your age and ability.
Entrance is free for all the family, plus you could win a prize and a £250 voucher for your nominated school.
Just grab a challenge card from the Utmost Gazebo and complete six or more activity challenges to enter.
The Utmost Community Sports Fun Day, Saturday the 1st of August at Nobles Park, in collaboration with Douglas City Council's Fun Day and supported by Manx Radio.
The latest edition of Manx Radio's Breath Mindfulness podcast with Karen Hardman is available now.
And welcome to my tropical paradise retreat.
Brought to you by the Good Health Store on Station Road in Port Erin.
This beautiful life-giving energy moves to your chest. This feeling can stay with you forever.
The latest in the Breath Mindfulness series with Karen Hardman and available now at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Let's hear from the boss of the steam packet. The managing director says there is a seat for every passenger on the Ben McCree. With Manxman out of action due to a mechanical fault, the company has been using the former flagship vessel as its main Douglas Tahitian route vessel. Well, of course, she's also on the Larne one as well. The cabin-free Ben McCree, that situation's brought complaints on social media from people who'd booked cabins they won't be able to use, but also issues of overcrowding on board. Here's the steam package chief, Brian Thompson.
Anybody that's got a cabin booking and have that paid back to them, we obviously can't take money for things that we can't fulfil. And it's just unfortunate that the Ben doesn't have cabins, because to fulfil our sort of voyage timings, etc., we needed the crew to live aboard.
And we have had people who on social media have said about the company hasn't been sort of brilliantly coming forward about that, to be, not in terms of refunds, but in terms of actually saying, look, the Ben McCree doesn't have these cabins, and we are happy to make these changes. That's something that you can reflect on as a company, just how this sort of the communication side of this has been handled and forward.
Yeah, I think we've communicated with all our customers, but as you can imagine, there's quite a sort of huge number to get through. So the staff are working through them, and everybody will be contacted before they're sailing. It's something that we don't want to be in this situation, but it's what we find ourselves in. And the staff are working really hard to try and accommodate everybody as best we can, as I said a minute ago. It's not a situation that we want to be in, but you know, the Ben McCree is a vessel that the public wanted us to keep. We've kept it. Unfortunately, she is the size she is, and you know, we can't really add cabins where there's no space.
Part of the thing with space has also been people saying that, you know, people have booked on for banks and where the public areas is like the digger away from the lounges, and they're struggling to find space to sit in perhaps the groups they want to on the Ben McCree, or the people have been reported sitting on floors, or issues of pet lounges. What is being done to manage that?
So I think all that's managed on board. I can tell you there is a seat for every single person booked on the vessel. That's why we're certified for that number of people. So I would urge them to approach a member of staff who will find them a seat. Unfortunately, it won't be the seat you want. It might all be who you want to sit beside, but there definitely is a seat for every person booked on the vessel.
There he is, the boss, Brian Thompson, from the Isle of Man Steam Packet Company, and the situation with the Ben McCree. Emma dropped a note in just to say, I've worked in public relations for years. If I were advising the steam packet and they were taking cabins off people who had already booked them simply because they'd chosen to put the crew in those cabins for their financial model, maybe I'll be offering those people a fiver or a tenner to spend on board the ship and themselves to kind of smooth the passage, rather than just refunding money that sometimes they paid months and months ahead. Just my thought, said Emma, but then again, I'm only a public relations professional. A week today, thank you, Emma. A week today, it's the Royal Manx Agricultural Show, Friday the 7th of August. A Man in Line's going to be there, as always. We do a broadcast live from the Royal Manx Agricultural Show, and we got a panel of experts who are going to be there. Stephen Keeley, the new boss of the creamery, is going to be there. Bill Dale from Beach Buddies, Murray Kringle from the Manx National Farmers Union will be there. Also, we got three farmers, Sam Murray, James Allenson of Allenson Spuds and what have you, and Ned Kennish will be there. So Sam, James, James, Ned, Stephen, Bill and Murray live at the Royal Manx Agricultural Show next week. And also in August, the Manx Care Interim Chief Exec's going to be on, Chris Stockport. Obviously now Teresa Cope has gone. She's now in Guernsey. But the new boss, Interim Chief Exec, is Chris Stockport. He'll be on Thursday the 20th. Looking forward to that. And let's keep our fingers crossed for the Ravens, who are back for a fifth season in English football this weekend. They face FC St Helens tomorrow. Kick-off at 6 o'clock tomorrow night at the Bowl. Lee Dixon officially takes charge of them for the first time since being appointed manager. And Darren Timpson will be providing full Manx commentary, of course, on AM 1368 and our DAB channel. Darren will have the commentator's microphone at the Bowl tomorrow, unless you're going to go and watch it. And lots of people actually go and see the match themselves and have those radios and listen to it at the same time. And a message also from Dave, who just said, thank the Lord. Well, I don't know. You have to thank the Lord. Thank Andy McCulloch from Heron and Brearley, because they're reopening the Colby Glen. She'll be opening fairly shortly in the coming weeks under new management. Dave said, we've really missed the Colby Glen and looking forward to it. Also, 2 weeks on Sunday, by the way, the Manx Grand Prix gets underway in Classic TT. Sunday, August 16th to Friday, 28th. Qualifying sessions running from the 16th to the 22nd. And the main MGP race day is 24th to the 28th, and of course it will all be live on AM 1368 with Manx Radio Motorsport. And while we're talking about sport, I've got to say congratulations to Rob Pritchard for staying awake for the whole week. Rob's been live in Glasgow with the 2026 Commonwealth Games. I don't think he's had any sleep for the entire week, he's been reporting. If you go to the Manx Radio Sport Facebook page, there's a live blog and all sorts of things happening there. A message in from Ali, who just said, why should Manx Wildlife Trust incur cost preparing reports to prove and countermand the supposed environmental effects on the island's wildlife as put forward by Orsted? I don't know. What do you think, Ali? And this is Gaz, who said, government's supposed to serve the people and be open and transparent, yet the AG found it necessary to caution MHKs not to speak about the Orsted wind farm. So one of the biggest decisions in a lifetime will be made by politicians who the uninformed support of voters, and it will start from a point of not having been open and transparent, says Gaz. It's involved, isn't it? That's it. We're back with another open line on Monday. Thanks to Donna on the phones today. Have a great weekend.
WINT